companies and who are concentrating more and more on capitalism instruments. And from the other side, we have the totalitarian regime from China. And so we are looking for a kind of a third way. We are creative in Europe, but what we haven't learned so far is scaling up, especially in this digital area. Our mindset is not open enough for it, because every national politician is thinking in this limitations of the national geographical borders. It leads me to this question: can democracy still survive because of social media? And here we need to be very careful. Once democracy is gone, probably we don't get it back somehow. And some states in the world have a big interest in destroying democracies.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Join host Sanjay Puri as he explores the dynamic and developing world of artificial intelligence governance. Each episode features deep dives with global leaders at the forefront of regulating AI responsibly, tackling the challenges using AI can bring about head-on and enabling balance without hindering innovation.
Welcome to Regulating AI, the podcast where we bring global, diverse voices together to create fair and equitable AI regulation. I'm your host, Sanjay Puri, and today we are thrilled to have a key architect of the EU AI policy joining us, Axel Voss, member of the European Parliament for the Cologne-Bonn region in Germany since 2009, and shadow rapporteur for the groundbreaking EU AI Act. Axel has been at the forefront of digital policy in the European Parliament for over 15 years, playing crucial roles in landmark legislations like GDPR, AI liability, and the Copyright Directive. As the EPP coordinator for the Legal Affairs Committee, he's been instrumental in crafting the EU's approach to AI regulation. Axel, welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. We are excited to dive into your insights on the AI Act, digital competitiveness, and the future of AI governance in Europe and beyond.
Yes, thanks for the invitation.
Wonderful. Axel, we have a global audience, United States, Canada, obviously Europe, Asia, a lot of policymakers, members of Congress, Senate, their staff, CEOs of companies. So for them, you know, it would be helpful. The EU AI Act has been called a global first in comprehensive AI regulation. How do you, as an architect of it, see its most significant achievements, Axel?
Yes, so it's good that we have a frame for AI. And of course, personally, I find this sometimes a little bit burdening for companies, a little bit too bureaucratic. But it's a good way forward. It's instead, I would say this is more than less a piece of legislation for a leading continent on AI, what we are not. And this is why I think sometimes we should have done a kind of a better risk-based approach on these big and small company level. And this is what we should have done, but we haven't because there was time pressure. But it's good to have a frame. Still, I think we need to adapt some more points in the direction of competition, especially if we are coming from Europe. We are, let's say, framed or embraced by the US big companies and who are concentrating more and more on capitalism instruments. And from the other side, we have the totalitarian regime from China. And so we are looking for a kind of a third way, let me express it this way, to link values also to technology. And this is why I think this might be the best way forward.
So for our audience, what you're saying, Axel, is you're looking for the third way. On one side, you have the United States, which is, you know, capitalism at its core, and other parts of the world, maybe China, which has totalitarian government driven. So this is a third way. And as you said, maybe not the perfect way, but it was the way that at that moment in time to get something done was very important. Axel, for the EU AI Act has taken a risk-based approach. Why was that chosen as the regulatory framework? This is for our American and Asian audience.
Yeah. So this is, the best reason is we do not want to take on board every little AI system, what even do not infringe rights or undermining something and so on. So that's why we are focusing on more or less two elements. The first one is AI or AI systems, what we totally don't like. So always mentioned as a kind of example is this social scoring in China. This is, we do not want to track our citizens all the time. So we had a big political discussions also around the biometrical data and how to use these and in what environment to use and so on. Predictive policing and so on. This has been a kind of an issue for discussions. And the second one, and this is the main thing we are concentrating on, is so-called high-risk AI systems. And these are systems that are still allowed, but might infringe fundamental rights or individual rights of citizens. And that's why we are trying to approach these in a very careful approach, so that we, meaning that we have additional requirements for the system itself, or meaning we have some obligations for the deployer. So, saying and also listing some elements here that where we are saying you can use it, but be careful.
So you can use it, but be careful. And you talked about the high-risk systems. Axel, at one place, I think you have mentioned that there is some level of legal uncertainty around the classification of these high-risk AI systems. For companies who are maybe looking at some of these things, and I'm going to address some of the, obviously, the criticism that has come in, how can this be addressed as the AI Act is implemented?
Yeah. So, of course, we have been under pressure the last Monday to come to an end at the end of the last mandate, and then now trying to avoid legal uncertainty via now guidelines from the Commission, European Commission, and that we are also trying to pressure the Commission more and more in a normal direction. But here we have some definitions, and even at the end, although we are trying to define what is an AI high risk system, what does this mean? And you have sometimes this thin line where it goes to the bad or to the good side, and that's why we have these uncertainties in it. So the sometimes the wording is very vague, and this creates legal uncertainty. This is what we are asking the Commission in avoiding. So we have still 1.5 year left for the transition period, so that the Commission now is challenged by all of these, where we are saying, oh, we need some technical standards in place. We need legal certainty by guidelines or model contractual terms and templates. We need to avoid legal overlaps. We need also to avoid overlapping in governance structures. And here we have to single out a lot in these 1.5 years for this transition period. And then what is extremely necessary, and this is what we have experienced badly from the GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation, that the interpretation of the provisions should be only one interpretation throughout the whole EU. We haven't done this perfectly with the GDPR, and this is a big mistake. We tried to correct these. It's not in a sense I would like to see it. It's not 100% okay, but it's already improved if you compare this with the GDPR. And so, and this is something where you where we are creating legal uncertainty. And but the, we all know there's a necessity for the companies to avoid that we should avoid and get rid of these legal uncertainties. And here for the commission is is asked to do so, and we are in the parliament now there for pushing them a little bit more in this direction.
So you're, for our listeners, you said there's a year and a half, and you're working along with other parliamentarians to bring some level of certainty so there is no legal overlap, etc. Because a lot of companies are watching this. So I think that's an important point. And we're going to come to the GDPR later because that's an important point that you made. Axel, how does the EU AI Act approach the regulation of foundation models and generative AI?
Yeah, so of course, during our discussions, and this came very late or at the end of our negotiations in the parliament, even the council and not the commission has integrated these questions. But then all of a sudden, ChatGPT came up, and we thought, oh, large language models, generative AI models, and so on. And then we integrated here something where we were saying we need probably at first a kind of a cooperation between everyone who is creating this fundamental model and then who is then creating an add-on for using this for something. So we have a kind of a interlinking of these AI developers. And that's why we thought we need here kind of a cooperation in this direction of the requirement of the AI system and also of the requirements for a deployer. So we are trying to approach this very openly, that we are saying you need to fulfill here these and that. But at the end, it's still very open. We mentioned it and we are proud of it that we have integrated this, but also there is a kind of a leftover, and this is also a kind of an important thing to solve. The relation between generative AI models and all the enforcement of, let's say, fundamental rights, individual rights, copyrights, neighboring rights, and so on. Because nobody can really explain what is happening in this black box of an AI system and or generative AI system. And that's why we need to think about, is there still a way to enforce those rights with or in a generative AI model? And this is how we should start to think, and not only start, and we should also solve this somehow. I do not know how in this minute, but we should concentrate on a solution. And this is something how we are addressing generative AI models so far.
So it's a work in progress, Axel. And you brought up the point about copyright. So how will the EU AI Act balance copyright protection with the need for AI systems to access training data? As you know, these generative systems, basically, their food is basically data in large portions that comes in. So from an EU AI Act, how are you balancing that kind of paradigm?
Yeah, so just in general terms, I would always say, if you are a technology developer, please respect the existing rights. But also on the other hand, we have to say, but copyright, for instance, can't hinder new developments. So therefore, we need a kind of a balance. And this balance probably can't lead to a 100% solution any longer for all involved parties. Mm-hmm. But we need a pragmatic way forward. How, just for instance, to give you an idea, how can these systems detect copyright protected works? So do we need a kind of a standard? It seems that robot TXT, what we thought 5 years ago of this copyright reform, would be one thing to single out copyright protected works. But here now we are seeing this is not really working. Secondly, of course, we need to find a way in saying how then, if you have detected a copyright protected work, who is the copyright holder? And then, as a kind of a third step, we need to solve the question how you can remunerate the copyright with a license or whatever in nanoseconds. And this is a kind of a challenge. I think nobody in the world has now a kind of a real concrete answer to this. But if we are leaving this like it is right now, then we are coming to an imbalanced situation, and we are not respecting really the rights of others who might live on because of these rights and can have the day-by-day life created by this. So this is something where I think we need to think about. We need to come at first to a pragmatic solution. And if this is then, let's say, accepted by all sides or both parties, then we can also think about to create a kind of a law around it. But at first, we have to find a way for a solution, pragmatical way forward.
So, Axel, what you're saying is that these companies need to respect existing copyright laws. But we now are at a transformative moment where we might need some new solutions, respecting the creators of intellectual property, but also making sure we don't lose out on technology. Now, I'm paraphrasing a little bit of what you said, but I think, again, for our listeners who obviously do work in the EU, I think that's a very, very important point. Axel, the EU AI Act has a broad extraterritorial scope. How do you think this will impact global AI development and deployment?
Mm-hmm. So the idea behind has been if we are trying to give all the AI developers this kind of obligation in respecting the rights of others, that we shouldn't allow a kind of loophole here in the system where we think, oh, if I'm going to, let's say, take as an example Japan, I'm going to Japan training my AI model with all copyright protected works because there I do not have a kind of an same quality of copyright. And then coming back and offering this to the European Union, this is something what we like to avoid. And so that the copyright, especially then the European copyright holders, are protected, and that also copyright worldwide needs to be respected. And this is the sense behind that we are not creating loopholes just because you are not training your AI system in Europe.
So what? Even if you train it outside, you still have to respect the rules and the values of the EU AI Act, I think, Axel, is what you're basically saying. Axel, just to shift for a little time on another very important topic, which you have taken a leadership role, and there's a lot of voices that are coming out across the board. You have proposed a digital agenda 2024-2029 to boost EU competitiveness. Can you just briefly, for our audience who might not be as familiar, outline the key pillars of this strategy?
Yeah. So, of course, one pillar is AI. And here, this is what I have told you already. Mm-hmm. Yep. A second pillar would also, what I would consider as extremely important, is the GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation. Here, we are exaggerating in some member states of the European Union the whole situation, and then we are not really coming forward with it. And this is also then something we have to, from my point of view, to come to a kind of a balanced situation in interpreting the laws. So meaning, if you just focusing on GDPR, you will never get a competition or come to a competition situation. So that's why I think we need to counterbalance these better, that you have the government structures and also the interpretations in a way that you are balancing, on the one hand side, protecting your citizens in this digital world, and on the other hand side, but also being competitive. So therefore, we need to do here something. From my point of view, it would be modernizing the GDPR. Then we created, let's say, with some legal tools like the Corporate Sustainability Directive, also the Corporate Sustainability Due Diligence Directive and the Reporting Directive, a lot of bureaucracy. And here also, I would say, if we do not want to lift these legal tools, then we should think about what can we do to be more effective for companies. And this would also mean digitalization of reporting standards, of ideas how you can streamline these reporting kind of standards, digitalize and also simplifying. And then you do not have to hire probably a lot of people for doing this reporting obligations. Then you can do or let this done by the AI and so on. Then, of course, what I would always say, what we should have in mind is reducing bureaucracy. Of course, energy is something what is in the focus of the Europeans, especially since the war in the Ukraine. Here we have also to think about how we can better manage energy in a way also through digital tools. This is also something what is very important here for us. To be efficient with the energy we have. So, and this is also something. Of course, what I'm always thinking would improve the whole situation, if a legislator in a democracy, they are so ponderous, even because also if you're politically fragmented and you have proceedings over the decades and years installed. And now all of a sudden you have a fast developing environment in technology. And so you can't really react to these in a proper or adequate timeline. So even here, I would say we can be better and we should come to legitimate democratic decisions within a shorter time. This is not really for the competitiveness itself, but it's a way forward for companies not to wait so long on a legislator, because then you can give a kind of frame of new technologies, of problems, where everyone can develop further. But if you're in this frame, then this is okay. Outside the frame, you might face trouble. So this would be also something in this regard. Of course, anonymizing data or pseudonymizing data, we do not have processes here installed where you can be legal certain at the end. So also this is something what we have to do. Politically, also, this is not really a competition question, but politically, we have to focus more on social media. This disinformation is undermining democracy extremely, is also is not protecting our younger generations in a way. So here we have to focus something on something. Of course, then also regarding competition, having in place, let's say, quantum or supercomputers for also the use of research, but also for companies that can be part of this whole situation. Of course, infrastructure, then cybersecurity, and a lot of money means at the end the precondition of being more competitive. And also, if we can digitalize our administration better, this would also be a kind of a requirement for a good place for doing businesses. So these you see from everywhere, it's a bit what's coming together. And this is what I would say can lift the whole situations. Of course, you need experts, therefore you need the skills, therefore you need this education. And this is all what I would say is necessary right now, if it would be possible immediately. But so we have to work on this, because so far I see politicians are more a problem for the digitalization or for the development of technology, because we are always saying how important digitalization is, but do not know really what this means in reality. And here I would like to give a kind of a way forward also to my political group, also to the parliament, if this might be a way forward.
So you suggested some a wide range of things from energy, but one of the things that underlines what you're saying is the use digitization to reduce bureaucracy and make things happen faster, make maybe Europe a better place for companies to work and attract more investments to do that. And that seems to be a conversation, obviously, you've talked about it, taken a leadership role. Mr. Mario Draghi has talked about it. There was a letter written by Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Spotify, Stripe, etc. And they also have talked about it. But you also talk about streamlining some of the digital regulations. Axel, how can the AI Act, GDPR, and the other digital laws that EU has, can they be better harmonized? Now, obviously, you made a point that GDPR needs to be revised. So let's just go with that assumption. But in terms of all these different laws, I mean, that's what some of these companies are saying. What can be done to harmonize them?
Yeah. So if you're looking to our last mandate, so we have done the Digital Services Act, the Digital Market Act, the Data Act, the Data Governance Act, the AI Act, and we have had already installed the GDPR. So, and we are always asking for governance, for enforcement, and so on. But because a lot of things happened in parallel, there was no coherent approach at the end. So this is something we have now to focus on. And still, I think this would be the right way forward, not to focus only on one element. We have to bring this together. It's politically difficult, and it might be also difficult from the administration side, but I think it's totally necessary if we would like to catch up with other regions in the world. So, and therefore, we do not have to have a lot of governance structures in place. We do not have to have different reporting obligations in place. And we need to have a competitive environment also for the companies. So we are creative in Europe, but what we haven't learned so far is scaling up, especially in this digital area. So, and this is something where we probably, our mindset is not open enough for it, because every national politician is thinking in these limitations of the national geographical borders. And this is why I think we should also scale up and making European projects, joining forces. Otherwise, we can't catch up, from my personal opinion. And this is what I would say is necessary to do. And now we have the opportunity to, let's say, more focus on enforcement or on improving all this, what we have done last term. And this chance we should take for our kind of duty for the next, let's say, years, but as sooner as better.
So it's AI presents a unique opportunity. I think Excel is what you're saying to our audience, and the EU needs to grab it because the talent exists. Maybe the systems around it, maybe the bureaucracy is not kind of helping the talents. One of the things, Excel, you talked about is funding, and you proposed a European Sovereign Tech Fund. How would this differ from your existing EU innovation funding, Axel?
So, so far, the innovation funding is built on programs. And, and of course, here we also have a kind of, a, let's say, member state-based orientation in a way. And this tech fund should be something for the whole European area and more thinking on these elements. If you have a good idea, let's focus on it and let's scale up if this is successful. And then we might have a chance also to lead somewhere. What I always also would recommend is that we now should focus as Europeans on some sectors or whatever. So if this is self-driving car or smart farming, green tech or whatever it is, but we should lead somewhere at the end, so that we can playing also in this league with others, but probably only focusing on small things, but that we also that we are there and that we are digitally surviving somehow in a way, and that we get experience and so on. And this is what I have in mind also with this tech fund, where we then can create also companies in a way which can act worldwide, also digitally competitive and so on. This might be a kind of a way forward. But here in this political world, it's a long way.
It is a long way, but one has to start somewhere. Excel, you also have called for a more cohesive EU cybersecurity strategy. How does it relate to AI governance? Because cybersecurity obviously plays a key role with AI too.
So now we are seeing, of course, that we have a kind of a coordination agency installed and trying to find a way to deal with all these member states. Of course, it's always difficult with these different languages, some different cultures in it. And but we need to find a way, especially with cybersecurity, that we are extremely effective. And also sometimes I think there should be a way forward of retaliation, of hacking back or whatever, because we can't only sit there and wait that someone is attacking us. Mm-hmm. So this is where I see a need of doing here more intensively and preparation and coming also to a kind of a a real European structure where we can immediately react and do not have to go through all these different languages and cultures and so on. So I think there is still space for maneuver or space for being more efficient. And that's why I think it's necessary also to step up with these.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that more coordinated approach, and then what you're saying also is that maybe not always defensive cybersecurity, that sometimes you might want to take on an offensive cybersecurity role also. That kind of goes into something that you have emphasized, which I think is a very important piece, is the importance of digital skills. What initiatives do you think are necessary to address the EU's digital skills gap, if you think there is a digital skills gap?
Yeah. So we so far we are seeing we do not have enough experts. And so also if you're going to the administration, public administration, then we need a lot more, because more and more will be based on digital issues, and therefore you need also the skills and the knowledge about to handle all these. So this is, I would say, like writing and reading and doing mathematics and so on. This is also something what is now necessary in our society. You have to deal with digital issues. So this should be a kind of a fundamental issue also in our schools and educational authorities. So, and this is not happening really in a way I would be satisfied with. And so we need therefore more focus on these. Probably, of course, in these days, our teachers are not that skilled that they can teach the younger generation more than they will know already. So that's why probably we need to think differently on how can we probably also use the experts from companies, let's say for 1 hour in a week or whatever, in training kids better and preparing them better for the day-by-day life, how they are growing up. And that's why, of course, here this is a competence, legally speaking, of the member states, but we need to push them a little bit more further to create such an education. And probably we need programs. If they do not have the same intention to educate the younger generation better in these digital questions, then we have to push them a bit, or attracting them to come to this with financial programs or whatever it is. But it's extremely necessary for the day-by-day life. First, and secondly, also now we see in this environment that data and making use of data and getting new knowledge out of it and new business models, this is make the world running right now. And therefore, we need to be better here in Europe.
So what I think you are suggesting is that maybe early on education systems need to be modified, where they're really just like they're teaching math or they're teaching languages, this digital skills, AI, all these things kind of need to be incorporated. Also, what you're saying is some of the experts and leaders should volunteer some time to these schools or other institutions which might not have the expertise, so that they're giving back to society, but bringing everybody along to create more of a digital skill structure is what you're saying, which is very, very important. I think that's those are great, great points. Excel, there is a little bit of a feeling. I'm based in U.S. in Washington, D.C., with companies in U.S. that, and some of them have said, till the EU get some of the regulations right, etc. We will not release some of our models, whether it's Google or Meta, etc. I understand that the EU, as you said, has to play that alternate role between complete capitalism and complete authoritarianism. You're finding that middle ground, but you also want the technology, because if they don't release some of the latest technology, the training data, etc., then that becomes an issue. What are your thoughts? I mean, how does one balance that? Obviously, these companies they have an interest in selling the maximum products that they want, but the EU also doesn't want to be left behind in some of these latest models.
Yeah, this is a kind of a big challenge. You have the feeling whoever has at first a good idea, or whoever has the most data already collected, what we consider sometimes is not correct because of this intrusive element for the privacy of our citizens and so on. That you have the feeling the winner takes it all. And this is something where I would say we are coming to a situation where we have two big countries in the world who might compete with each other, and nothing else will count on this level. And this is something where I would say we need to activate our digital surviving. If we would like to play a role, we need also to act in this direction. And this is what I'm not seeing right now in the European Union. We are always trying to be, to see a lot of problems and creating infringements and so on, instead of looking at the chances and not only focusing on risks. So, and this is something probably we should overcome here. Mm-hmm. And being more straightforward and then trying to mitigate risks afterwards. But there should be a will, because here also I think the biggest companies already, especially from the Western or more democracy parts of the world, and they have also a responsibility. If you're looking to the social media right now, then you have the feeling, this leads me to the question, it's exaggerating a bit the whole situation, I know, but it leads me to this question, can democracy still survive because of social media? And here we need to be very careful. Once democracy is gone, probably we don't get it back somehow. And some states in the world have a big interest in destroying democracies. So that's why I think there is also a kind of a responsibility with the big companies. Sometimes you can feel it, but sometimes totally not. And this is how I would say we need this kind of, at first in Europe, this will of digital surviving. And secondly, then to create the environment for it and providing this kind of third way forward. And so of course we do not have too much time for it. And that's why I'm asking all the time, we need to be faster, we need to be better, we need to be concentrating on these and that and so on. I would say without less success in a way, but in a democracy you need majorities. And so far the other parties more focusing on this risk, and this is not helpful at all. It's helpful in balancing, but not then meaning in hindering innovation or hindering development. And here we can be better.
I think those are great points. Finding the third way, maybe moving faster, but making sure democracy is greatly protected. I'm based in Washington. We have an election in 1 month, and I can tell you, Excel, what AI presents in terms of disinformation, the scale and speed, and we had some guests that talk about, you know, the deep fakes and things of that nature. It is unbelievable. And, you know, obviously, you know, no technology is going to be worth it if you lose democracy. So I think your points are very, very important. And really, thank you, Excel, for sharing such invaluable insights on the EU AI Act, the future of EU, and your frank feedback in terms of what needs to change. Because I think there are a lot of things that can be improved in all parts of the world, and also finding that third way. I think I found that very, very helpful. And your perspective as a key architect of this landmark legislation really provides a crucial context for anyone who's working or following AI development. And to our listeners, Axel's comments highlight the complex balance between innovation and ensuring ethical and responsible AI. So thank you to all our listeners. Remember to subscribe to Regulating AI for more conversations with policymakers and thought leaders. And until next time, this is Sanjay Puri. Keep innovating and responsibly. Excel, thank you so much. This was fantastic, and we'd love to have you back. We are really thrilled with some of your frank feedback.
Yes, thank you, Sanjay.
Thank you.